Welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Many expect robots to take over many of the jobs we have today. The concept has started in grocery stores, of course, and on assembly lines. Now robots are encroaching on the realm of journalism. Joining us now by phone is Will Oremus. He's senior tech editor for Slate.com. Welcome to the show, Will.
Thanks for having me.
So how are robots or computer programs being used to write stories?
The big news this year is that the Associated Press, the major news wire, has started using software from a company called Automated Insights in Durham, North Carolina, to automatically generate stories when a business reports its earnings. So you have these quarterly earnings reports, and in the past, the AP has used business reporters to quickly scan through the data, see what the bottom line is and the top line, and write a quick news brief just to get it out as quickly as possible. It turns out that software can do that a lot faster than humans. It's perfectly accurate, and it doesn't cost much money.
In your story on Slate.com, you refer to two articles about the same earnings report, one written by a human and the other by a program. And when I read them, you challenged the readers to figure out which one was human and which one. And it was obvious which one was which, except that when I read the first one, which was the computer program, it was perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, that's right. So they were two earnings reports about Disney and about how Disney was doing as a business. The one that was written by a human for the Associated Press pulled together some facts about recent releases from Disney, the movies Thor and Frozen, and how they might have impacted the earnings. It made it more interesting and more relatable to the average human reader. But that said, just as you mentioned, the one that was written by software, the one that was written automatically, was perfectly fine. It led with how much Disney had earned for the quarter. It compared that to past quarters and looked at some general trends in the data. It would work just fine if all you wanted was the quickest possible summary of what the earnings report contained.
Right. And so why is that important, the distinction between them? One was telling more of a, it was more nuanced. It was a human written one versus the other.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this tendency to fear that robots will eventually take all of our jobs and do everything that humans can do and become super intelligent. We're just a long, long way from that. That said, it doesn't mean that robots and software programs can't do some things that humans do today, perhaps better, faster, and cheaper. So writing a story in which you spin a narrative, or writing a lead that really captures a human reader's interest, or writing a story that shows originality or ties together some disparate forms of evidence to form an argument, those are things that software is nowhere close to being able to do today. The people who make the software will tell you that's their ultimate goal, perhaps, but it's a long way off. So we still, good news for humans, human journalists still have a role to play in writing stories that people can really relate to, that people can sink their teeth into, and that can make fresh points.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Will Oremus. He is senior tech writer at Slate.com. We're talking about the future of robots and programs when it comes to journalism. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. When you talk about the software is nowhere close to how humans would write, that's something that they're working on. How are they working on it?
Well, they're building what are called machine learning algorithms. And these are forms of software that can be trained over time to improve at a given task. It's sort of a trial and error form of software. And eventually, this type of software can become probably not intelligent in the way humans are, but it can learn, it can improve, it can get better at something like writing a story. So what happens is you give the software some templates for what type of story this might be. So we mentioned business earnings reports, but but another way that this type of software is being used is to recap Little League sports games, or even to give a personalized summary of someone's fantasy football game that their team played this weekend. You know, because it's so cheap and so fast, you can do millions of these things, and you don't have the additional cost of a human reporter to write each one. So you can do things like deliver people personalized news. Well, when they do something like summarize a Little League game, they can give you the basic information in the same way that a human would, you know, who scored the runs, you know, which play was the game winner. And they can actually select from a number of different story templates. So one might be a sort of hero wins the game template where they'll lead with the one person who had the spectacular individual performance, and then they'll go into the basics of the rest of the game. Or if the game plays out in a different way, they might learn to write that story in a sort of collective team effort way. You know, they'll lead with the fact that everybody on this Little League team got a hit in this game in a true group effort as they defeated the other team. So they can actually mimic the ways in which humans write stories. And as they get trained and improve, they'll learn which templates are appropriate for which sorts of situations. And you can approach a type of story that really does look like a human might have written it.
You quoted New York Magazine's Kevin Roos, who observed, he said the stories that today's robots can write are frankly the kinds of stories that humans hate writing anyway. And as a longtime print journalist myself and an editor, a lot of times those are the stories that new journalists need to learn how to write before they can take the next step.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, I think every journalist has been there at one point, right, where you have a press release that you have to do a quick rewrite of, or there's police call that has been reported by the police department and you have to give a quick summary of it just for a news brief for the paper. These are the ways that human reporters cut their teeth. But honestly, I don't think it bears that much resemblance to the type of work that journalists ultimately want to do. I think Kevin Roos of New York Magazine is right that the types of stories that robots are doing today are the types that end up being grunt work for journalists most of the time. They really don't require human intelligence. I mean, I think your point is well taken, that it can be good training for journalists to learn how to check their facts, get all the details right. But in fact, what's happening here is in most cases, so this isn't true of the personalized stories like the fantasy football reports, but in the real news stories, the robot comes in first and writes up the report. And then what happens is the humans will look it over, and then they'll go in and add some detail. They'll add insight. They'll take what the software has written and turn it into a real story. You could almost look at what the software is doing less as writing a news story and more as just sort of data processing or data visualization. They're taking the basic data that comes in, and they're visualizing it in prose form, which turns out to be a really readable and helpful form for people to absorb information. But still up to the humans to sort of give it meaning, to give it context, to tell you why it's important and why you should care.
Where do you see this trend moving forward? Do you see it taking over more and more necessarily journalism, or do you see it going in other directions as well?
Oh, yeah, it's going in all sorts of directions. So journalism is only one of the most visible forms of automated writing today. In fact, Automated Insights and some other companies in this space have been making a lot of their money by selling their software platforms to companies to do things like automatically generate stories about some of their own internal data that they're seeing, their sales and marketing numbers. The software can write up a summary so that their internal employees don't have to write it. They can even do personalized reports for employees, employee performance reports, and say, Ann Fisher has done a remarkable job this quarter. She has, delivered more newscasts than she did the previous quarter. Obviously, those aren't the types of things that you would get from a human boss who can really, you know, sort of qualitatively examine what you're doing. But they can still be useful, and I think we're going to see more and more of that sort of writing for companies and on a personalized level.
How much do these programs cost? Is it affordable for lots of companies? Obviously, the Associated Press, it's cheaper than hiring another reporter.
Right. So it depends on the scale at which you're going to use it. It's obviously expensive for the companies that are making the software. It's sort of capital intensive, and it's labor intensive to get the software where it needs to be in terms of the quality of what it can produce. But the marginal cost of each article that you're producing approaches zero once you've bought the service. So it's enough. The barriers are enough at this point that you or I probably wouldn't want to afford getting access to this platform to write ourselves personalized stories about how our day went today. But small businesses will be able to start to afford this sort of software. And certainly if you're going to use it at a huge scale where you're producing hundreds or thousands or hundreds of thousands of reports, then it's a really cost-efficient option to hiring humans to do all that work.
And do they envision that humans will always be checking the work?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think eventually a human will want to look at everything. But in the case of these business earnings reports, for instance, they want it to cross the wire as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. The goal here really is to pick out the most relevant numbers and to deliver them as quickly as possible for the people who are really professionally relying on this information. Mm-hmm. This is not for the casual reader, again, but it's for somebody at a bank or an investment analyst who wants to know the report. And as soon as possible, I think that the the time is just incredible. Actually, they can do thousands of reports in a minute. They're basically instantaneous.
And I started this out by referring to robots. We don't often think of robots as programs alone.
That's right. I don't know how it got started calling them journalist robots or calling it robo-journalism, but uh-huh. It has caught on because people like the idea of this sort of sleek metal machine sitting there typing out a story. That's obviously not how it works. They aren't robots in the sense of physical machines. They're just software programs and software platforms. And actually, the one that Automated Insights offers is a platform that companies can adapt to their own purpose. So the AP would buy access to the platform, and then they would customize it to write the stories in the AP's style. The AP has very distinctive rules capitalization and punctuation mm-hmm. and how everything should be phrased. No, sadly, there aren't any actual robots tapping away at a keyboard.
That would be fun. Will Oremus, thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thanks for having me.
Will Oremus, he's senior tech writer at Slate.com. Coming up, more Tech Tuesday. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. For many of us, summertime means vacation time. Some use their vacations as a time to take a break from technology, but there are lots of gadgets out there designed to enhance your summer fun. Here with us to talk about the best summertime tech and apps to help you make the most of your summer is Curtis Franklin Jr. He's a tech journalist with Information Week. Welcome to the show, Kurt.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's talk about the SteriPen Ultra. It's a water purification system. I would love to know how this works.
Well, the SteriPen Ultra works a lot like the little gadget that your barber or hairdresser uses to sterilize the combs and brushes. It uses ultraviolet light to kill all the little nasties that can live in water. It's amazingly effective, doesn't put that chemical taste in the water, and can really purify hundreds of gallons of water on a single battery life.
So how does this SteriPen work?
Well, you take the SteriPen, put it in a container of water, usually one of the little aluminum water bottles or something like that, slosh it around just a bit, and leave it for a couple of minutes. And by the time it's finished, the ultraviolet light has done its work. Now, in many cases, to make it work a little bit better, you may put just the tiniest pinch of salt in the water. And it has to be noted that the Steripen doesn't filter the water. So if you've gotten, say, muddy water, it doesn't do anything for the mud, but it will take care of the little critters that live on the mud.
Now, I used to go backpacking a lot, and that would have been wonderful to have.
Oh, it really is. You know, the first person who turned me on to a Steripen was a friend of mine who was preparing for a thru-hike on the Appalachian Trail. He was going to use this because often what you have when you get out in the wilderness is water that looks absolutely pure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's clear, it's apparently clean, it's fast-flowing, but you just never know what might be living a few hundred yards upstream. So for a condition like that, the Steripen is absolutely perfect. It can also be great, I have to note, for those people who might be going to other parts of the world where the water, while it comes out of the tap, can look pretty good. You don't know what's in it. Steripen can take care of something like that.
And is it, how big is it?
It really isn't much bigger than, say, a fountain pen. They really are quite compact.
And are they affordable?
They are, I think, in the grand scheme of things, very affordable. There are different models, but usually you can get one for somewhere between slightly below $100 to slightly below $200, you know, depending on exactly how big and how big the battery, things like that. But, you know, compared to buying Imodium D by the case, I think it's pretty affordable.
Or just ruining a very expensive vacation.
There you go.
Okay. My guest is Kurt Franklin, tech journalist for Information Week. We're talking about technology for vacation time. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You have the Swing Smart Duo for those who are attempting to improve their golf swing. There's a lot of weight placed on the right way to swing a golf club. It's meant to correct your swing. How does it work?
Well, what the what this does is it gives you information on a couple of things, on the pace of your swing and the path of your swing. You know, if you've ever talked to a golfer, you know they can spend hours going on about inside out or outside in and whether they are accelerating at the right point in the swing. It gets very technical, and most of us have to turn to a coaching session to get any kind of real feedback on this. Well, what this does is put numbers behind that. It will take the measurements as you're swinging. It has a host of little sensors inside, and then it will pass that information onto an app that lives on your smartphone to display everything that's going on. So it can augment coaching. I hate to say that any kind of technology like this is going to eliminate the need for coaching, because it doesn't, but it's a great augmentation device to make the coaching more effective.
And it costs about $250. It's a sensor that clips to the shaft of your golf club, right?
That's correct. Now, you know, and people will say, well, that means that it's going to be a little bit different feel than the club without it. That's true, but having talked to some people, the weight that it puts on the club shaft is minimal. And most people, to be honest, aren't so sophisticated and sensitive in their golf swing that they're going to notice that.
And how would it send the information? I know it's connected to the smartphone, but does it tell you about where in your swing the acceleration occurs, and how does it do that?
Well, you know, it has some sensors, and they're called accelerometers. They have a variety of ways that they can tell when they are moving and how much they're moving and the rate at which the movement changes. You know, this is very similar to the same technology that lives inside, say, an iPad or other tablet to let it be a game controller, similar to what's in, say, a Wii controller, that kind of thing, to let it sense movement. Well, this takes that technology, puts it in a little thing that sits on your golf club shaft, and having taken the measurement, it uses the miracle of Bluetooth to send it right over to your smartphone, and there's an app that then can display the information in ways that make sense to you.
There are lots of gadgets out there for golfers to improve their swing, all different kinds of things. But $250, it's pricey, but some people will do anything.
Well, on the one hand, yes, I tend to think that $250 is more than just an impulse buy. On the other hand, if you've been in a sporting goods store lately and seen how much they're charging for, say, a good putter or one of the new high-tech drivers, $250 actually is pretty affordable in terms of the entire golf kit.
And you can move it from club to club.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the great things. You can take it. It clips on and off of the shaft, so you can get feedback on your entire golf club set.
And instead of bugging somebody in the middle of their swing, you can stick it on their club.
Absolutely. You know, if your buddy says, hey, what am I doing wrong? Well, you can take this, clip it on, and then afterward, you can be the expert interpreter of the data.
Okay. You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Kurt Franklin, tech journalist for Information Week. We're talking about gadgets for summer fun. If you have a question or comment, if you have a suggestion, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now we're going to talk about cameras for kindergartners. We used to just give them a disposable camera, so we wouldn't have to worry about it. But nowadays, cameras are everything. And if you aren't going to give them a smartphone to have their own camera on that, this one gives you an option, right?
It really does. And I don't know about you, but whenever I go to vacation spots, I see lots of parents doing things like handing a smartphone to a relatively small child, say a kindergartner. And that can be great, but you either have to put the smartphone in a big, bulky case, or you watch the parents being very paranoid about whether their child is going to drop the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what this does, there are a whole series of these, but I chose the VTech Kitty Zoom, which is relatively affordable, very, very rugged, and very, very easy to use. It basically just has the one big button. It uses a lens system that essentially focuses from fairly close up to infinity. It's not so many megapixels that it's going to pick up every flaw, but it allows the kids to record the vacation from their point of view. And I know that when my son was much younger, we would sometimes, as you said, at that point, give him a disposable camera, and we were always amazed at what he thought was important, what he thought was worth bringing back from a vacation trip. This takes that, puts it in the digital age, and I think for most parents would bring a whole new dimension to the post-vacation scrapbook.
So what can you do with it? It's digitized. I mean, it's digital, so what do you do with it?
You can either connect it via a USB cable to your computer and download all of the things, or you can pull out the little SD card that it uses for storage, put it in your laptop or whatever device you're using. It takes the image in the standard JPG format so that you can then pull those images off and put them into anything you want to. I have family members who are big into, as I said, scrapbooking, and digital scrapbooks have become huge. Well, this would allow you to take all those images, put them into the digital scrapbooks, or if you're sharing vacation photos with family members and friends on one of the social networks, this is the perfect format to use for that kind of sharing as well.
And I like you write about having your child type or dictate text to go along with the photos.
This is something now, I'll admit that as a journalist, I probably did this more than some parents did, but I always found it fascinating to get my son to tell me the story of a vacation or a trip or something that we had done. And I think that a lot of parents might find that this is something that really extends the joy of a vacation. If shortly after or even at night, when you're sort of kicking back, sort of relaxing after a busy day of vacation, get the child to tell you about what they did that day. Write it down, and if you've got the photos, this is the sort of thing that will capture memories that you will be very happy you captured years down the line.
About $400. I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong. How much do they cost?
The
$39.99, right? Okay,
is $40.
Right, so that's very reasonable.
I think so. And again, this is very rugged. It's sized and shaped for the children to be able to hold it and manipulate it with their little hands, and it really is, I think, a super solution to bringing the child's viewpoint to family vacation memories.
Now you have something that you call a life log camera that people attach to their clothing?
Oh, life loggers, yes. Now, I don't know if you have ever looked at stuff like Google Glass on your program, but the whole notion of the heavily recorded life is something that many people are beginning to talk about. And this is a camera that's in that genre of technology. The idea is that through your day, you can clip one of these to your lapel or, you know, somewhere on your clothing, and it will automatically take an image every so often. Usually it's every few seconds, or if it detects that you are changing your movement. So if you've been sitting down and you get up to do something, it will start recording a little bit more often. Many people are doing this as a way to just keep track of their day, you know, in the way that some people write a diary. Others are using these cameras to capture their day. I thought it would be a great thing for someone on vacation to use this so that they didn't have to spend the entire vacation through a camera viewfinder. You can go back, and as with most things, most of the images that it takes during the day, you're going to delete the first time you look at them. But the odds are pretty good that if you're on vacation, there will be some that it takes where you go, boy, I'm glad I was able to get an image of that. And again, it makes a great thing for your memories of the day. It can also, I have to say, be really good should something go wrong. Let's say should something turn up missing and you don't know where you left it. Well, having that image, that string of images, could help go back and figure out where the last time you had that was and where you walked off and left it sitting on a chair somewhere.
It also might be a good recorder for people who are on bike rides or something like that, and if something goes wrong. A lot of people put video recorders on their helmets and that kind of a thing.
Right, in the active sort of the extreme sports world, the GoPro camera has become ubiquitous. Or now there are a bunch of competitors. This is much smaller, much less obtrusive than a GoPro.
I can't tell how small it is from the picture. Can you describe that to me?
I would say if you've ever at a shopping trip bought one of the big packs of gum, the 20 stick. Pack of gum, that's the right ballpark for the size.
And it is $399. It's not cheap. Is the quality good?
The quality is quite good. That's one of the things that led me to recommend this camera versus some of the others. The quality is good. The sensors are good. And as I point out, you can, at no extra cost right now, get it in some really spiffy colors, if that matters to you. But the nice thing is, as I said, to me, the biggest part of the value of something like this is that it can create that visual record without requiring you to think about taking photos all the time. Now, I enjoy taking pictures. I have that as one of my hobbies. But even for me, there are times when I want to just have the experience. I don't want to be worried about being the documentarian of what's going on. I just want to enjoy the family time. A camera like this is perfect for those situations.
Let's talk about travel apps. You had several, starting with Gate Guru for airports. Tell us about that.
Well, You know, a lot of people who take their summer vacations are not professional road warriors. These are not folks who are on a plane every week. So, you know, once a year, you and your family are going to take a vacation. You're going to go through an airport on a connection, and maybe you don't know about the airport. It's the first time you've been there. You get there with your family, and you'd love to know if there's a decent place to eat, to get a snack, to relax, that sort of stuff. Gate Guru is an app that has information on every airport that it has more than about two gates in the country, and many of them internationally. So you can pull up the Gate Guru information for the airport where you've got your layover, and it will tell you where the restaurants are, where the restrooms are. If you want to know how to get from the gate where you are to the gate where your next flight is, Gate Guru will help you with all that. It's just a really useful small app that gives you information that can make that very stressful connection period a little bit easier.
And also, well, before we move on, do they use maps with this? Is that how that works, or is it just give you lists?
They will give it to you in whatever form you want. There are maps. If you're someone who processes lists a little bit more easily, it'll give you the information that way as well.
Okay. And then there's Flight Tracker. Why is this important?
Okay. I have the experience many times of sitting at a gate, my flight is delayed, and I'm looking up. It's 11:40, and the information there at the gate says that the flight is going to leave at 11:30. I'm going, you know, probably not. So Flight Tracker gets its information in a lot of different ways, and I have found over the years that it is very accurate in telling you when your flight is most likely to actually leave. It has consistently been somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes ahead of the information that I'm getting from the airlines, and that can be critical in the summertime when storms, congestion, and other things can really play havoc with flight schedules.
How can it get it faster than the airlines do on their boards?
They apparently have some sort of hooks into control, into the airline systems. They're able to, with some intelligence, pull that together and give you an estimate. I have found, and in talking to airline employees, I know this to be true, updating the information at the gate itself is not the airline's top priority. And so often the airline will have the information far ahead of the time that it shows up on the little sign at the gate. So Flight Tracker is able to get that information, give it to you much quicker than you're likely to get it sitting at the gate.
TripIt, it helps keep track of reservations. How does it do that, and is that all it does?
You know, if that was all it did, it would be enough. Basically, what you can do, if you've got air travel, hotels, auto rental, and other things, you get those confirmations via email most of the time these days. Well, you just forward those to an account at TripIt, and it ties them all together into a total trip report. So you get one place. There's a website. There's also an app for your smartphone. So you can look at it, and it will give you everything that you're going to be doing during your trip in one place. You don't have to keep up with printouts of your airline reservations, your hotel reservations, your car reservations. It keeps everything in one spot. Now, it will also, if you ask it to, allow some of your friends who use TripIt to see what your travel plans are, so that if you're going to be in the same city, you can arrange to get together. There is a paid version, if you wish, that will do things like keep track of all your frequent flyer numbers and other things. That tends to be more valuable for someone who is traveling regularly for business. For the casual vacation traveler, the free version of TripIt really makes things much easier.
And then finally, My Refuge. It gives more attention to wildlife refuges across the country. Tell us what it tells us.
Absolutely. Now, this is something that is of great interest to me, and I found out about it about a year and a half ago. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's wildlife refuge system has gone in with a partner, and you can, with this free application, get information on wildlife refuges all across the country. Now, a lot of people know about national parks, but the refuges tend to have a lower profile. And what this does is tell you about refuges that are near you, tell you about the activities going on there, give you the map of the refuge, give you basic information. And if you want to get out and get into a place that's a little less frantic than many of our summer vacation destinations, finding a wildlife refuge can be a stunningly wonderful thing to do. This is a free app. It's updated frequently. It really has made my travel a lot better.
And who puts that out? Who puts that together?
This is a partner, but it goes out under the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service logo and under their auspices.
Okay.
It's a really cool thing.
All right, My Refuge. We'll have links to all of the items that we mentioned on today's program at WOSU.org/allsides. Kurt Franklin, thanks for joining us today.
It has been my pleasure.
Kurt Franklin, he's a tech journalist for Information Week. Coming up, more Tech Tuesday with Russell Holly from Geek.com. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. From Rosie on the Jetsons to Siri on the iPhone, humans have imagined and created technological assistants to help us with our daily lives, either fictional or not. There is a new robot personal assistant available, and it wants to become part of your family. Joining us now to talk about that and all that is tech is blogger for Geek.com, Russell Holly. Welcome back, Russell.
Thanks.
All right, so it's called Jibo. It's a personal assistant robot. It seems like a far cry from, you know, Rosie, or say the personal assistants in the movies like iRobot. Tell us what it can do.
Well, so Jibo is this this tiny little white robot that kind of almost looks more like Eve from WALL-E, except it doesn't fly around or anything. It has it's got no legs. It just sits wherever you put it. It's battery powered, so you can carry it around with you if you choose. And instead of being a personal assistant for one person, like we see with Siri or Google Now or something like that, the purpose of this is to manage multiple people at the same time. And it does this by using facial tracking and voice recognition to work with different people in a specific household. So the demonstrations that they've given so far, you know, someone comes home from work and on the you know, the key stand, you have Jibo and it recognizes you as you walk in and, you know, interacts with you either, you know, telling you that you have messages or, you know, trying to help you arrange dinner plans if you want to order out. It has interactive storybooks for children. You can set it up at parties and have it, you know, take photos or, you know, track individual faces for video chat. But it really seems more like, you know, just kind of a robotic arm for a lot of the tablet features that we already use today.
Does it work in conjunction with your other devices? Is it envisioned as being part of like a smart house someday?
The information that they've given us so far has been kind of confusing. It works with or is supposed to work with a lot of some of the smarter accessories in a home. So, you know, smart lights that you want to turn on and off using wireless connection or something like that, Jibo is supposed to be working with. And it has its own set of APIs for developers to integrate into their existing applications. But all of the apps that they showed for Jibo were either built internally or were just kind of generic demonstrations. For example, the email client that was used to show when email showed up was something made by Jibo. It didn't have integration with, you know, Apple's email client or Google's email client and things like that. And it could just be that this is so early on that that kind of integration hasn't happened yet. But the available information suggests that it may not integrate quite so well at first with some of the software that you're already familiar with.
So it's been out there for a while, at least in practice. They've had people working on it. Is it improved over the previous version, the one that's going to be released?
So they've done a lot in the way of updating how it moves around and the hardware that's inside of it, as far as the cameras and their ability to take pictures and kind of track faces. But the biggest thing that is going to make or break a device like this, especially at a $500 price tag, is going to be the software, and that's one of the big questions that we haven't really gotten answered yet.
It doesn't move around, right?
It has like a head with a display. It's a touch screen, and that part will move around, and follow you around as you walk through a room. But it's just a flat bottom. It doesn't get up and walk or scoot around or anything like that. You have to either unplug it from its charging port and carry it around with you, or just have it in kind of the most trafficked room in the house.
And is it designed to appeal to children, adults, the whole family? How does that work?
Their whole goal is to make it as family-friendly as possible. So they want it so that everyone in the house is interacting with it. And, the Jibo tools have a little something in it for everyone, from the interactive storybooks to, just kind of basic, even business-oriented communication features.
And is it available now?
It's available for pre-order now. They're expected to ship developer editions in September and have the actual consumer versions shipping by Christmas.
Okay, moving on to NVIDIA Shield?
NVIDIA, yeah.
NVIDIA. Gosh, gaming tablet. They need to give me pronunciations. NVIDIA Shield, it's a gaming tablet. It's a gaming-focused tablet, I guess, controller as well. Tell us about, are they sold together or separately? How does that work?
Well, NVIDIA announced earlier today that they're going to start selling what's called the NVIDIA Shield tablet. And the NVIDIA Shield was originally this kind of controller tablet, amalgamation, where it was this big bulky thing that looked like kind of an adult's Nintendo DS, where it kind of folded open and you could play these games. But you could play, more adult-focused games that focused on things like graphics instead of, kind of the cutesy things that we normally see from Nintendo. And it also was a, completely functional Android tablet. So you could even, in theory, get work done on it. But the controller was really bulky and it made the whole thing kind of heavy. So they've separated the two, and they now have a wireless controller that pairs to the Shield tablet that is significantly more powerful than its predecessor. It's actually, technically speaking, the most powerful tablet on the market today as far as what its graphics card is capable of internally. But it's got a huge gaming focus, allowing you to play games with the controller, even connecting the tablet to the television and having multiple controllers interact with it simultaneously like a game console. And it works with a lot of NVIDIA's existing software, like the ability to wirelessly stream games from your computer. If you have a gaming PC but don't want to be sitting in front of it all day long, then you could play from another room or something like that. And you can stream games that you're playing on the tablet online for other people to watch through services like Twitch TV.
What kind of games can you play? Anything?
Well, any game that's available in Google's Play Store will play on this. But NVIDIA also has, I think, right around 400 titles right now that they call optimized for the Tegra software, or rather the Tegra hardware. And what that means is that, visually it's just going to look more like a console game, where you've got that higher quality game jump. And in some cases, there are big titles like Half-Life 2 and Portal, and in other cases, big multiplayer games like War Thunder, which are, which is a PC game that you can also play on the PlayStation 4. And so the whole point that NVIDIA is trying to get across with this is that it's a tablet that, can work and play on the same level as your PC or your game console.
Can you use the controller with a tablet you already have, or do they have to go together?
You will want to use this with the Shield tablet for some of the deeper integration features that it has. There's a Shield button that allows you to navigate through some of the custom menus that are built. But it is just a wireless controller on the face of it. So just in the same way that you would use an Xbox wireless controller or a Logitech wireless controller with, with their respective devices, they can be adjusted to work with other tablets. And so it's something that is possible, but some of the buttons aren't going to work exactly the same across other devices.
So the release date is July 29th. What are we talking here in terms of price?
$299, which is really surprising for the base model. This is significantly more powerful than the iPad Air, and it's an 8-inch tablet for almost $200 less. So it's definitely something that I have yet to play with one myself, but I'm definitely very eager to see how it stacks up against some of the other tablets that are out there, because on paper anyway, it is very impressive.
There is something called a Whirlpool Swash. What is it? Is this the future of laundry? Is the burning
so
question.
Weird. I saw this and I just thought it was so weird. Whirlpool has made a stand-up device that allows you to take single outfits and put them on hangers and put them in this machine, and it does what they call freshening the clothes. You put like a shirt or a pair of pants in this machine, and there's a 10 or 15 minute process where heat and these pods that Whirlpool makes with a bunch of chemicals in them will clean and freshen and kind of get the wrinkles out of individual clothing that you would put in this thing.
Is it like a dry cleaner type thing?
It is almost like a dry cleaner in the way that it works, but it doesn't seem to work, on more than like one garment at a time.
What does it look like?
It's this big standing device. Like it doesn't look like a washing machine or a dryer. It almost looks like something from a science fiction movie. Honestly, it's this kind of big standing, slab, and it has a drawer that spans the entire length of it. It's probably 4 feet tall, and the drawer pulls out with a hook for you to hang a shirt or a pair of pants on, and then you slide it back in, and the idea is that 10 minutes later you'll be able to pull that item out, and it'll the wrinkles will be gone and it'll smell fresh and you'll be able to wear it.
Does it work on stains?
It apparently does not work on all stains, but it is supposed to work on most stains.
It's $500, and then you have to buy these pods to put in it. You have to buy it at Bloomingdale's, which says something right there. This is for people who love their clothes.
Yeah, it seems like, this is for someone who has, kind of a high-end wardrobe, and, maybe if they have an important meeting in the middle of the day or something like that, then they can rely on this to do something about their clothes to make sure that they are nice and fresh before heading into them. I guess I don't quite see the big deal, but I'm kind of a t-shirt and jeans kind of guy.
You're not their target market, I would guess.
Yeah, I'm clearly not their target market. But yeah, I could definitely see, there being a situation where if there was one of these nearby and there was a big important meeting, wanting to use one. But it's definitely not something I would imagine to see in every home.
We only have about a minute left, but we wanted to talk about the beta version of Destiny, the video game. You've been playing it. Tell us what you think so far.
It is so much fun, Destiny. Bungie has done a great job making this game, feel very much like a Bungie title, which means, if you've played Halo, then you will feel right at home. Hmm. But it looks and plays very differently. So the game itself is a ton of fun. It is closed right now, but tomorrow Destiny's beta is opening up for PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and the two current Xbox consoles. So if you have pre-ordered the game, you will have an invite code. You'll be able to play up to the first 8 levels of any of the 3 characters that are available. And it really is just a ton of fun. If you are on the fence about this game, I would definitely recommend checking it out. The game is going to be completely different from first-person shooters that I've played so far. This has definitely been enjoyable so far.
All right. You sound like you have a fun job. Russell Holly, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Russell Holly, our tech blogger for Geek.com. And thanks for listening to Tech Tuesday today on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.